Welcome back to We Are YA. I'm your host, Felicity.
And I'm your co-host, Shannon.
And on this season of We Are YA, it's the Vampire Academy Recap Party as we celebrate the release of Peacock's Vampire Academy series, which is based on the best-selling books by author Rochelle Mead.
Each week, we'll be looking back at the books, hearing from Vampire Academy fans, and recapping every episode of the show. And we'll even have some special guests, including author Rochelle Mead.
Beyond the Wards was a big one. So many people warned me about this episode, and I was still not ready for the epic highs and heartbreaking lows of it. Which, by the way, I can't believe we're at episode 7 already.
No, me neither. But joining us to discuss all of those big moments is Rochelle Mead, author of the Vampire Academy series. So welcome, Rochelle.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Woohoo, we're surviving.
We're surviving. But we have so much to discuss. So without further ado, let's recap what happened on episode 7, Beyond the Wards.
We open with a little backstory of how the separation of humans and the Moroi and the Guardians was first established by Sid Vladimir, as an unknown person narrates to us the history, while at the same time, a masked and covered vampire bribes their way into the hospital to get blood bags. As they try to exit, they bump into a staff member who seems shocked but is quickly joined by two people in black suits with golden face tattoos who offer a mystery drink to help this person forget what they saw. And boom, for the book readers out there, we have the alchemists.
Victor is chatting with the queen, looking to get her support to mandate him to the throne. She's not having it, though, saying that after Andre's death, there was a time that she could offer her outright support, but now he's on his own, and he has until tonight to get the support of three other families to claim the majority.
Rose is racing through the grounds, looking over her shoulder as someone chases her, but never fearing. After she gets to her destination, Dimitri appears. And while she claims he might have cheated in the promise to not scout the location ahead of time, she also recognizes that this helped him find a private spot where they could be alone together. And boom, we have a Dimitri makeout session. And everyone take a deep breath because that was a real moment. However, they're interrupted by Lyssa, who doesn't see Dimitri but calls to Rose, needing a favor.
Lyssa asks Rose to help her go and meet Adrian again. She needs to know more about how to be a spirit user and Rose and Lyssa's shared bond, without the darkness fully capturing her. Rose isn't a fan, acknowledging that Adrian is a drunk, but Lyssa says a self-medicating drunk, and that he could help her.
Dimitri then talks with Lyssa, reminding her how dangerous the outside human world is, and how planning and preparation is everything they need to do before this type of operation, and they won't even get out of the gates without the right approvals. But Adrian Ivashkov chimes in, "They will for me." Dimitri begs her to go another day when he can assure her safety, but Adrian mocks him, asking Lyssa, is he cool with what we have to do? Lyssa calls Dimitri's bluff, saying, you're in or you leave me to Adrian, being the only one who could protect me, in which Adrian chimes, I'm useless in a fight, in a very Adrian way.
Adrian then asks who his guardian would be, and Rose strolls in, to which the iconic, hello, little Dampier, is uttered.
Woo-woo!
Neither Rose or Dimitri are impressed. Rose spots the car and wants to drive, to which Adrian willingly hands over the keys, telling her he's in her hands. However, of course, Dimitri ends up driving.
In the car, Adrian and Lyssa compare spirit powers and her compulsion and healing versus his dreamwalking. Of course, Adrian also uses this time to try and flirt with Rose some more, but she's not buying it. Dimitri is listening intently, and Rose says maybe it's time to explain. So Adrian admits they're off to see a Moroi who has written about spirit users and is not popular with anyone because of it. While driving through the streets, both Lyssa and Rose are thrilled to see the outside world, and Lyssa realizes they need different clothes.
Victor gets to network for the throne, connecting with the families who could swing the vote. He's still making excellent points about doing this to protect young guardians' lives and that they're not just bodies. After getting positive feedback, he quietly leaves, clearly exhausted by the effort, and his guardian tries to help, but he brushes off the assistance and walks away.
Dimitri and Adrian wait outside for Rose and Lyssa while they get clothes. Adrian sort of knows where they're going, but isn't 100% sure, and Dimitri is not impressed by Lord Ivashkov. Rose and Lyssa emerge, and Dimitri cannot keep his eyes off Rose, which both Adrian and Lyssa spot. And keep it cool, Dimitri! Adrian asks, who's ready to go clubbing?
At the club, Rose and Lyssa are loving the crowd and anonymous vibes, while Dimitri is not happy. Way too many exits and entry points, and only Rose and him to protect Adrian and Lyssa. At the VIP entrance, security tells Adrian that he can't bring his muscle in with him, So Rose and Dimitri are left to wait while Lyssa and Adrian continue onwards, promising maybe only one drink.
Lyssa and Adrian have a drink and chat, and Adrian isn't thrilled with Lyssa's choice to marry Jesse, which, same, Adrian. He tells her that coming into the human world and seeing the fun and the mess and the chaos that they create makes you realize how many rules there are. He also suggests that the list of names she was given to get her quorum through marriage, maybe she should look at who was left off and might be more fun options. Adrian Ivashkov, are you suggesting what I think you're suggesting?
Outside the VIP room, Rose is encouraging Dimitri to let loose and dance with her, that he doesn't know how to be free. After a few looks, Dimitri fully succumbs and we get a sexy club dancing scene. But just as Adrian and Lyssa exit to see the moves going down, Rose doubles over in pain, and Dimitri immediately asks which pain it is. Rose is shocked that he knows, but the man is attentive and has seen it a few times now. They all hurriedly exit the club, but not before Rose comes face to face with a Strigoi, who is clearly watching her. In the car, Rose promises she saw Strigoi, even though none came to attack. Lyssa meanwhile whispers to Rose that she saw the whole thing with Dimitri in the club, and while Rose doesn't say anything, Lyssa tells her she approves. And their next step of the journey? A moonlit boat ride.
And on the boat ride, we get a truly beautiful Dimitri scene. They stand outside, and of course Dimitri quickly realizes she's cold, so invites her to stand in his duster. They talk about the freedom she wants, and he seems nervous to experience. He confides that when he was 13, his father returned to the commune to visit his mother, and Dimitri heard him beating his mother, and years of Dimitri's anger and rage built up, and he fought back. Afterwards, he saw fear in his mother and sister's eyes and saw it in himself. And without the code of the guardian, he's been fearful of that freedom until now, until Rose showed him possibility. They share a tender kiss, and it's just lovely.
They head down to the apartment block in a rundown part of town where our mysterious narrator from the start of the episode is the contact, Clarice. She won't see Adrian and tries to slam the door in his face. He tries to encourage Lyssa to use her compulsion, but she merely tells the contact she could use it unless they invite them in. Interested, she lets Adrian and Lyssa in while Rose and Dimitri stand guard outside.
Victor goes to see Sonia, telling her that he's been successful in securing the family votes they need for him to be king. He is, however, struggling, and she sees instantly and volunteers to heal him. She tells him she's rested and feeling much better herself, and with little resistance, he accepts her spirit healing. Tatiana is paying a visit to her aunt and telling her they need to think bigger and they can't let Victor win. She tells her she must speak for the church, and Tatiana is playing all the angles.
Outside the apartment, Dimitri demands Rose tells him everything. Inside, Adrian and Lyssa explain the Vladimir artwork that they have, highlighting the dreamwalking, compulsion, and healing. And Clarice says there are reports of a fourth visual, one which showcases Vladimir and Anna, his mortal guardian, and a shared bond because Anna was shadow-kissed. Lyssa silently recognizes that this is her and Rose.
Back outside, Dimitri is furious and disbelieving about the idea of spirit. He can't believe they think it exists and it goes against the entire order and history. Rose fights back, reminding him it could have been easily erased from their past, but he won't have it. However, Rose is again struck down in pain, and we've got Strigoi incoming.
Inside, Lyssa is devastated and angry to learn that she's been offloading the darkness on Rose, hating herself for being another parasitic royal. Rose bursts in and tells them that they have to leave, and Clarice is furious that they've brought Strigoi to her. Just as they make it to leave, Dimitri jumps in and locks the door. It's too late, and the Strigoi are here.
Lyssa, Adrian, and Clarice hide in the bathroom while Rose and Dimitri face down the two Strigoi in another epic battle with some close-quarter hand-to-hand combat. And again, these two in battle are fierce. In this fight, we get the iconic stand-fight-side-by-side gif that we saw from the series trailer. Inside, Lyssa is panicked, but Adrian reminds her that maybe she didn't willingly give her darkness off. Clarice says the reason Vladimir and Anna were shadow-kissed was because he'd committed the ultimate sin, and just as she's about to tell us, a child Strigoi bursts through the bathroom window. Dimitri and Rose pause and share a glance, and then Rose dives into the bathroom to rescue Lyssa, but struggles to stake the child Strigoi, and it's Clarice who throws flame and sends a Strigoi falling off the balcony that tells Rose never hesitate. Dimitri, meanwhile, looks crestfallen, like he's failed, and this isn't good.
Meanwhile, the queen is preparing for her succession with a private ceremony with High Priestess Mariana, who basically says, pick Tatiana for the queen or you get no support from the church. The queen tries to remind her about the separation of church and state and how one family ruling both would be terrible, but the high priestess won't budge and says Tatiana or no one. Back at the apartment, Rose recognizes one of the dead Strigoi from the club, but Dimitri can't believe they wouldn't just eat up all the humans. Clarice tells Lyssa that she's ruined her world, and it isn't the Strigoi she's afraid of. It's who comes next. She then leans into Lyssa and whispers a secret, but we don't hear it.
Back at court, Victor is informed it looks like he lost the Queen's support, and if he doesn't hustle to secure his votes, he'll be out of contention. Sonia is desperately struggling with the darkness overwhelming her, and a feeder arrives, but she can't control herself, and despite the cries of the feeder, continues to drink their blood. Victor implores Queen Mariana as she's about to make an announcement and says, "Sorry, the church forced my hand, but hold on, because I've got one card left to play." She announces to the royal tour that due to the division, she's suspending the vote and will put the candidates to the ancient and religious endorsed royal trials, wherein the elementals will help decide. It's actually a brilliant move, and she's played both sides so they can't fight her on it.
Outside, Dimitri is training and Rose comes to see him. He says there can never be a moment again where they question protecting each other or their charge. Rose realizes it's a dream, but she asks him if he felt it too. And break my heart, he replies every second, before running away, leaving Rose sad and us devastated.
Oh my God.
At Clarice's, the two alchemists from the episode opening arrive and through a magic potion dissolve the dead Strigoi's bodies. Meanwhile, Lyssa is opening a letter from Adrian with the fun options for her royal quorum, and on the list, Christian Ozera. Yes, Adrian.
A knock on the door interrupts her thoughts, and Rose wants to talk, but Lyssa interrupts her, saying she doesn't want her to be her guardian anymore, and that it's wrong how they treat guardians, and she just can't do it to Rose. Rose is furious, saying she can't believe Lyssa wouldn't give her any say in the matter, and that Lyssa has no idea what Rose would give up for her, that she would die for her. Lyssa interjects, saying, "You did." And we flash back to Clarice telling Lyssa about how Anna became Shadowkiss to Vladimir through resurrection, but also we finally see that Rose did actually die in the car crash, protecting Lyssa, and that Lyssa healed her back to life.
Rose is still furious that firing her is Lyssa's answer, but Lyssa's closing the door on Rose and saying it's a start. Rose is devastated, pounding on the door, calling for Lyssa, but Lyssa ignores her and returns to her desk to take pills to suppress the spirit in her. Victor returns from court, still not looking 100% to be honest, and there he finds the dead feeder and Sonia nowhere to be found.
So much happened. Ugh. I'm glad we recapped it because there was just, I watched it yesterday and
I
forgot.
A lot went down.
A lot went down. Rochelle, join us in A Lot Went Down.
It's a lot. And hearing that recap, I just like went through it all again and it's,
right?
It's mind-boggling, but it was great.
I mean, first of all, I want to talk about Adrian and Dimitri because their banter, I mean, Kieran hinted at it last week when he was a guest on the show, but their banter this week was I was into it straight away.
I liked him riding shotgun after the fight. They all get in the car and they're like running away. I'm like, Adrian is riding shotgun. I want to know how that happened. He's next to Dimitri and they share a look.
I loved the very start when we first have Adrian, Rose, and Dimitri all encounter each other. And there's just this like eye-rolling kind of, who is this guy vibe going on?
Well, he drops the hello little Dampier and can't blame him for, I can't blame Dimitri for throwing him a look on that one.
Yeah, he knew. As soon, just the way that comes out, little Dampier, it's so loaded.
But even like, I love that in this world, Rose is also like, who are you? Like, she's not, it's not straight away into like the triangle that many book fans know and love. We may get there eventually, who knows? But in this episode particularly, we see Rose kind of tolerate it and think he's amusing, but there's no like, oh, hello. It's just, who is this guy? Like, what's going on?
I think that's the general reaction in the books, though. I don't recall in my writing people falling instantly in love with Adrian. I think everyone's reaction is exactly that. Who is this guy? Like, that's what he puts out. And then slowly, you know, Adrian is Adrian and you get pulled in.
True. I will say there are a lot of Adrian fans out there who would dispute you on not loving him instantaneously, Rochelle.
No. But Rose definitely didn't love him instantaneously.
True.
He's like really flirting with her for books 3 through 4, I feel like. I'm sorry, two through four, end of mid.
He comes out strong in Frostbite.
But he comes, like, as soon as he comes out in Frostbite, he's after Rose, and he makes that crystal clear. And she also makes it crystal clear, like, I don't know who you are, and I'm not so sure about
so
you.
So the vibe is correct.
The vibe's correct.
Yeah, yeah. I also love that Dimitri is just getting to witness it firsthand straight away and just be like, no, no, dude. Because he seems to not tolerate it so much as just like going, he doesn't have a chance because he's too busy doing something else this episode, which we're going to talk about soon. But speaking of Adrian and spirit users, let's talk about Lyssa and Adrian, the spirit users together, the good, the bad, the ugly.
I like it. I've said this before, I think with Mia and Christian, it's just, I like guys and girls who are friends teaming up, doing stuff. And Lyssa and Adrian are pretty different personalities, but they sync up with this, and they're kind of a good little spirit investigator duo that they're fun to watch.
I want to get them t-shirts now. spirit users investigates.
You kind of have the different levels of spirit affecting each of the spirit users too, because you got Adrian, who just kind of fully self-medicated all the time. Lyssa, who's kind of like actively worried about the whole, what is this? What's going on? This weird darkness and investigating. And then you got Sonya, who's like aware that something, but she's kind of leaning into it a little bit too.
I don't know, and I may have missed it. In the show, does Lyssa know that Sonya's a spirit user?
I don't think so.
Yeah, because when she talked about only knowing three spirit users, I was like, wait a second, you don't realize that there's another one out there who's not in a good place and probably not someone you want to know about?
No, because they haven't really interacted, I don't think.
No. So that's interesting. I wonder, you know, will she discover that, and that probably will make her even more anxious about the dark side and turning dark. But I did love that Adrian convinced her, like, we got to see fun Lyssa, and like, again, maybe the relationships that she and Rose used to have of being a bit cheeky and escaping things, and like when they went into the VIP section and Lyssa's like, maybe I'll have one drink too.
Well, even just changing, like finding new changes of clothes felt very like classic Rose and Lyssa book to me.
Very much so.
Oh, I loved that part because it's, you know, we're going to put on human clothes. And they were, but at the same time, they were kind of like on the extreme end of human clothes. It reminds me of movies where someone like from the future travels back to the past and they're like, we have to blend in. And they've got like this completely out there. It's timely, but kind of, you know, whoa.
So it's a normal people costume.
It's probably we don't know how to go into the human world, so we're going to do what we think humans would wear. And it's kind of like a bit too far. You're like, no, maybe just a bit more subtle. Low key, guys, rein it in. But I was waiting for a montage. It would have been tonally so inappropriate. But I was like, let's have a clothes montage.
At the department store changing rooms, you know, where they come out and everyone nods or shakes their head.
It would have been amazing to have Dimitri and like Adrian sitting on the couch going, not that one.
I feel like Dimitri's trying on dusters in that case, though. So.
Gosh, all right. No, we'll talk about the duster later. Oh, my God. Let's talk about the politics and religion, because that became a much more realized thing this episode, particularly the religious side of it and the power there. I think Tatiana going to her aunt, who's the high priestess, who in this episode to me, really, we became aware that this high priestess is kind of almost the equivalent, I guess, of a Pope-style figure who has a bit of say, and if I back this person, this many people will follow me. So I thought that was really interesting.
Definitely. I really like how the church has been built up in this series and become so entwined with the government. People asked me with the books, like, why is church even mentioned? You know, why do you care if vampires go to church? And it's certainly in the books, nothing like this. But I liked just this background spiritual religious element that's kind of unique to these supernatural creatures. And so to see that then get pushed to the front and really developed is awesome for me to see.
What also speaks to the very European nature of the history of like St. Vladimir's world, where you know, historically, churches were much more politically involved in medieval times, and along with royalty. So it kind of really, again, sets up that this vampire world that we're in is so old. And I think it also works really well because when they're having these conversations, they're sitting in the most beautiful Gothic cathedrals that, like, it wouldn't quite work if you were just sitting in, like, the local church. It just feels really stately, and she's sitting in that huge, like when Tatiana was talking to her aunt, the high priestess, in that in that thing. I'm like, well, this is a beautiful location that if you tried to make it a set, it just wouldn't feel the same way. So again, shout out to the set and location people because you're doing an excellent job.
Speaking of that final power play, though, we're going to get to see the trials. I'm very excited to see how that looks.
I was impressed with the Queen's manoeuvring because I thought she'd been boxed into a hole.
Nope, she had a final card, man.
Mm-hmm. I'm still not sure if she's got a side or she's just playing whatever side.
She's holding pretty true to the I want the best for, like, the Dominion. Like, I want them united. I want the best leader. But you know what? I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
I don't know. I'm torn. She's great, though. I love it. Like, I love that she even tried to, like, she tried to politically maneuver with the High Priestess and be like, no, 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 you don't tell me, church and state. And then the Priestess came back at her and I was like, oh, well. A little bit of conversation was happening. Another person who's had a tough episode, really tough, Sonia.
Oh,
it was not good for Sonia.
Yeah, it was bad for her at the end of the last episode. And you kind of think like, oh, it can't get any worse, can it? And yeah, of course, it can get worse.
She's just, from episode 5 onwards, it was just not her time. Midway through 5, Mikhail never came back. It just she's having a rough trot, this poor Sonia.
I don't know. I have some questions about the ending of episode 7. Feeder's dead.
Yes.
How purposeful was that? How much was that the darkness? How much was she deciding, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to, you know?
So you don't think accidental, you think deliberate?
I don't know that I think it's accidental.
Ooh. See, I thought it was accidental, like, as she was feeding, the darkness overcame her.
Maybe. Maybe that's what it is. But it felt a little bit like, you know, what does she have to stick? Like, she doesn't really have Mikhail anymore, and Mikhail turns Dragoi. Like, she might be like, oh, I have nothing left to lose. I don't know.
I feel like, you know who I'm really worried about? We didn't see her this episode, but I'm really worried it's going to devastate her is Mia, her sister. This is going to really devastate Mia. It's going to make her even, like, tougher and harder. And I'm just like, she's just opened her little heart to Meredith.
I feel bad for Victor. He's the one.
Yes.
He probably came home like, what happened?
So here's my question with the Victor thing. He walked into that room unwell at the start of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he protested a little bit to Sonia healing him. But he went into that room. He knew what he was. It's not a seismic shift. I think it's the slight, I need to have this happen, so I'm going to ask for it, versus like, please don't, please don't. The first time he was healed by Sonia, I think, was completely, he didn't know, didn't want, didn't think. This time around, though,
his healer's gone now.
Means to an end. I know this is true.
So, I don't know.
Yeah, whatever will he do?
Whatever will he do? Find another healer, perhaps?
I mean, he doesn't know Lys's spirit, though, is he? Does he?
I don't think anybody knows, right?
She's told Adrian, which I loved it most. It's like, what are you doing? Stop telling everybody. All right. So we have a newly emerged subsegment of the recap chat, which is Dimitri does. We found a thing he does each week, which was episode 2 was Dimitri does dancing. He does motorbike riding. Last week was Dimitri does tattoos. Rochelle, what is your Dimitri does this week?
Oh, goodness. Well, he danced again. I don't know if we can repeat that.
I feel like it was reluctantly, though, this time. Mm-hmm. It was more of a, he rocked back and forth against Rose.
Dimitri does moonlit boat rides.
Oh, this is true. Aww. Dimitri offers a coat.
That's true.
Duster hug, right?
Yes. Is that a thing? Dimitri, yeah. Dimitri does duster hugging? That sounds weird.
that sounds...
Dimitri does breakups.
Oh, too soon.
I know, salt in the wound. Salt in the wound. I mean, should we go there? Let's all hold hands. Let's start at happy times. Can I tell you how gleefully childlike I was at the opening scene when they made out on their little train?
That was a cute scene.
That was hot, Shannon. Cute, hot.
I like them together.
I did too. I thought it was lovely. I thought they were so beautiful and they were like fun and playful. And again, I know that I'm the only one doing it, the Dimitri smile count, but he was smiling and grinning at her a lot.
You're keeping track. I think you have a spreadsheet somewhere.
Yeah, but we're starting to reach a point, I feel like, where you probably could graph out the highs and lows of the show. So if you like rate that moment, like, oh, that's like a 10. Like, you know, there's going to be a totally opposite compensation at the end that will be as terrible as that was good.
Yeah.
It looms over you.
We had that, and then we had the boat, and I was like, oh, no, this is something bad's happening. I looked at the clock, and I'm like, we've got 30 minutes to go. No, this is not going to end. A whole episode of them having a lovely time is not going to happen. But I will say I did appreciate that our boy, once he commits to a relationship, is like, right, I'm going to scout out a location to so we can have a little makeout session. Classic Dimitri. He's like, I'm still going to do reconnaissance and work it in, but I'm going to also make out with my girl.
Maybe that's what Dimitri does. Dimitri plans makeouts, or there must be a better way to put that.
I know. Dimitri does reconnaissance. We'll workshop it. We'll take your feedback, everybody.
Everyone tweet at Penguin Teen your suggestions.
What is Dimitri does for this week? For this episode 7. Let's get to the boat ride. Because first of all, I didn't think that was what the moonlit boat ride was going to be. I was kind of expecting a little bit something smaller, and then it was like an actual ferry.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They were the only ones on it, weren't they?
I think there was a few people. I mean, it was nighttime, so they probably had to. It did look like, though, jokingly, I don't know if we'll keep this in or not, but the ferry from The Office. Did anyone watch The Office?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one where they're on the boat trip?
A little bit.
Yes. And can I say, we had a similar couple on the outside deck having a real moment of rawness and confession. We did not have Michael Scott doing a conga line.
It's the place for confessions, Felicity.
But it was just, I don't know, it wasn't the same boat because obviously they were in Europe, but I was like, this is like The Office. We've known this is Dimitri's history. Rochelle, you wrote this. Was it a little heartbreaking to see it spoken in such a way?
I wouldn't say heartbreaking. It's such a key piece of him. And I would say it moves your heart a little bit because you love that Dimitri's been so stoic and, you know, he's tough and hard. But then you also love that there's a reason for it and he's got this past and he's human. Well, you know, Dampier human, but he's suffered like other people. And I think that kind of can blow your mind when you do see Dimitri as this untouchable god. You know, he's not. None of us are.
And I think it's also interesting, too, that for me, at the end of that conversation, besides anticipating that we'd had too much nice Dimitri scenes, I was also aware that we'd had a lot of scenes in the club particularly, but even before that, where we saw Dimitri's fearfulness and his, like, caution in very stark contrast to Rose's, like, rashness and playfulness and joy. And it was sort of the first time that I thought they're not quite aligned on where they are yet as humans, as people, not humans, but as people, in that her immaturity is still pushing a lot of her agenda. Like her thing of like, let's just go to the club and let's not worry about exits and entrances and come on, have a good time. It'll be fine. Yes, her extreme was too extreme. His extreme was too extreme. But I'm kind of more on the side of him of like, if this goes bad, we need to be on guard. We can't be dancing in the club. And I think that was sort of where you saw them not marrying up yet, not quite aligned. And that's why, in a way, the breakup, as sad as it was, it felt right.
Whoa.
Just like stop the tape.
Let's walk that back a little bit, shall we?
Okay. I'm ready to defend it.
Okay. Are you ready for my case of defense?
Yes.
Okay. You're wrong.
Wow. You should be a lawyer, Shannon.
That's my evidence. My evidence is Dimitri.
Okay.
And therefore you're wrong.
Rochelle is the third party witness.
Rochelle, back me up here.
I'm just getting my popcorn and letting you guys do your thing.
I don't say that they're not endgame. They are endgame hard.
All right.
I am queen of Dimitri, Shannon.
I don't know. The way you're talking right now, I have suspicions that you're like.
But do you not think that he has to get more comfortable in the freedom?
Okay, listen, you're talking about character growth. I can understand it. I don't have to like it. That or you're secretly Team Mason, and I'm not sure how I would feel about that either.
I'm not. I'm sorry, Drew Linnea. I love you, but no, I'm Team Dimitri all the way. I just think maybe time apart is what they both need to do to grow a little bit. Because I think if they tried it now, he seemed uncomfortable when she was pushing him to be free at times, particularly in the club. And she seemed a little frustrated by him not being free. And like
The scene that was a little heartbreaking was her and Lister, looking outside the window at the world they haven't experienced. And she hasn't had that yet. And he has. And for right or wrong, I feel like she needs to have a bit more of that before they can come back to each other for good.
I think kind of the conclusion of that episode is Guardians don't get that.
Like, that's true.
They never really get it. Because she kind of makes a few comments about that. Like, I've never been in a room with people I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know anyone here. And it's kind of sad when you think about it. Like, Guardians, they don't get that opportunity. And you can kind of see, because that's Dimitri now. He's never been in a club with just a bunch of people he doesn't know without being on guard.
Yeah.
Because he's a Guardian.
But it scared him. And it woke her up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they have to figure out how to be okay with the other person's more. That's my
That's your case?
I know. I can't believe I'm coming out for pro breakup.
Okay.
I don't know how I did it.
Tweet at Penguin Team. Team Shannon or Team Felicity.
Wow. She's got real brutal. Damn.
T-shirts for sale on the Penguin Team website. Get them now.
I mean, there are Team Dimitri and Team Adrian t-shirts, but this is taking it to a whole other level. Again, break up for now, not forever. I'm just saying. But before we get to that breakup, there is the epic scene at Clarice's apartment, our contact who has all the information, who at one stage in my mind, I was like, oh my God, it's Sydney Sage. it's Alchemist Sydney Sage, but no, it's too soon. We can't pull the Sydney Sage trigger just yet. We've got a lot of other surprises, but not yet. But she had some information.
She did. She knew a lot about our friend St. Vladimir.
I know. Which is getting a little different from the books because Christian's more involved in uncovering that in their research. So I'm interested to see how Christian will understand that to be. But I don't think we answered fully a couple of, you know, things about her history and her backstory. I'd be interested to know because she seemed very afraid of the alchemist, which... Is she afraid by reputation or afraid because she's had a run-ins with him before and it's not good?
Yeah, I was very curious about that too. And I certainly love the mystique being built up around them as another dangerous faction to add to our growing list. But yeah, what is her history? She's apparently known as sort of a heretic amongst the Moroi, and I hope she's not gone for good.
I did love Lissa's, like, God love, Lissa is so positive even in the worst of times. She's like, you can just clean up your apartment. It'll be fine. She's like, oh, child, no.
A little club soda will get that right out.
little spritzing of the dead bodies, no problem. No, she's out. She's gone. But then we have the fight scene where... We get the visual of don't hesitate. We actually have Rose and Dimitri slightly hesitate, which I was like, I didn't clock it as hesitation until later when he talked about it. I just thought it was a slow-mo stare. And they were just, I was like, yeah, you know what? I'd be fighting and lost in his eyes too. I get it. But in retrospect, yeah, you did kind of pause and go, you or my friend?
Yeah, I just as a slight aside, as soon as I saw that child bouncing the ball when they walked in, I was like, something's happening to that kid. You can't have that in a show or a movie.
No.
Just that moment, those 5 seconds dedicated to them means something's happening.
I will say it was a bit funny though because the parka that they were wearing had a really brightly colored kind of rainbow fringe to it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they first burst through the window, it kind of looks like a clown. I'm like, is a clown Strigoi? It was
that,
not.
That happens to be my very worst nightmare, so I'm going to need you to not say that again.
Okay, note to self, no clown Strigois. But yeah, I was, as soon as I saw, especially when Rose kicked the ball and like kind of smiled at the child, I'm like, oh no.
Mm-mm.
That's, things aren't long for you. But I will say again, it's interesting that Dimitri, when he said to Rose earlier in the club, which is it, which pain are you experiencing? Is it the fear of Lissa or the Strigoi one that he's noticed that? But no one seems to be quite clocking that this perception that Strigoi are ambling, dumb, kind of zombified vampires is not true. That we've had a number of cases throughout the season so far where they've shown organization, they've shown tracking, they've shown collaboration between each other. Like, I want someone to catch this a little bit sooner than they probably are, because I feel like if they don't, bad things are going to happen.
Yeah, the only people that were Mikhail and Sonia, who are no longer authoritative sources of information for the rest of the people. So,
oh, that's a nice way to put it.
I'm like, you're right. Mikhail would have been right onto this. He was, This another reason to RIP Mikhail. The man would have been texting people saying, hey, what's going on? I feel like he also would have come to the club.
I can see it.
He would have. But RIP Mikhail. Sorry. We're just going to, can't let him go.
You're just rewriting new scenes for
Mikhail. I'm just going to fanfic him in from every episode. I mean, again, I still.
It's a new segment.
I actually, the Strigoi that Rose saw in the club when she freaked out and he was just looking at her, I for a second thought it was Mikhail. I actually paused it. Because I thought I was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or she was doing the Shadow Kiss book style where she was seeing what was in the books, Mason, but she was now seeing a hallucination of Strigoid Mikhail.
Hot take.
I really thought it was. Actually, in this, when I was writing my recap notes, as I was watching the episode, I wrote Mikhail and then we had to go back and change it when it just was a Strigoid who was watching her.
Well, you heard it here first, the fanfic edition of episode 7.
He's still out there somewhere in my heart. Sonya's going to dig him up. But then, so we have the fight scene, and then Clarice is the one who utters the iconic line, never hesitate, which I actually think made sense.
Dimitri definitely agreed.
Yeah. He said similar things to her before.
It's a reminder to him, though. So maybe there is something significant of someone saying it to him, because he started to, you know, he's veering from that stance he had at the beginning. And that's kind of his wake-up call, perhaps, mm-hmm. that leads to the end.
Well, and it's that beautiful scene outside where they're talking and he's like, you can, and even in that moment afterwards when the fight's over and he just kind of looks at her and he's so disappointed in himself because this is the greatest thing he feared about letting go, was that someone would be hurt or be in danger. And it's exactly what's happened. And so he just knows that he can't. But break my heart, Dimitri, when she says it was a dream. Do you like, you know, I can't even remember the line so much. It's like.
She was like, did you feel it too?
Yes, that's right. Did you feel it too? And he says, every second. I was like, oh, etch that in my soul. Like the man, and he had to run away from his emotions.
I don't know. That was a classic. Love fades, mine has kind of a.
No, because he meant it. He felt it always.
I know. But like, you know, like the I'm letting you go kind of thing.
Yeah. I think they mutually both let each other go, though, again, to this sense of like she was the one to kind of say it was a dream to think we could make this happen.
No, I disagree with that.
So you think she would have tried to continue the relationship?
I think she would have tried.
Interesting. Rochelle?
Oh, now I want to go rewatch it and see. I felt like she was unwilling. She wasn't happy about it. But I do think it wasn't because of an obliviousness. I think she knew that there was that impossibility. But she's Rose, and she's still going to be like, oh, you know, she still wanted to go forward with it. And so I'm kind of striking the middle ground there between you.
This is true. It's the nuance. But it was a heartbreaking scene again. And then we end on the dead feeder. On the dead feeder and Sonya. Another cliffhanger-y kind of ending vibe.
That's so ominous too, because she's not there. I think Strigoi Sonya's on the loose then.
Yeah.
Episode 8 will tell. I don't know.
She's about to go off the chain.
Yeah.
Go for Tatiana. Get her. Unleash it.
Ooh, I didn't think about that.
I know, right? I don't think it'll happen straight away, but I am ready for her to be like, you said my boyfriend was incompetent? Mm-hmm. Let's go. Outside. I'm ready for it. But it does, I can't, looking at the episode count, we're at 7 and there's only 3 to go after this.
Ooh.
But it feels like we're like clipping through things. Like there's so many things happening in each episode now. It's just, I get what Kieran and Cece were saying last week of like, there's not really happy moments coming. We're just hitting plot. And going, makes me nervous.
Yep. It's going to get worse before it gets better. And it may not get better.
I don't trust you, Rochelle, and the world that Julie Plec built from your worlds for it to get better right now.
Hey, it's kind of nice just to be able to sit back and let someone else take the grief for it.
I didn't do it.
I can bask in the same misery, but it's just like, you know, if I'd redone it, everything would have been a lot happier.
They would have stayed on the boat and had a nice boat ride.
They would have gotten married when they got back and it would have been wonderful. And Tatiana would have died. And wow. I could fanfic that up. You know.
See, we've got so much fanfic from the previous weeks already, from the Dimitri Does series. of mini. I want you to write mini ficlets of Dimitri Does. I think it's all happening. Speaking of fun things, everybody's favorite surprise and delight. Cha-ching! So it's our favorite time of the week, and I'm carrying over last week's rules, and I'm going to enforce them because there's no celebrity guests here. Rochelle, you're a regular now. You can't hide under the banner of celebrity guest anymore.
Oh, brutal.
You cannot. But you go first, so it doesn't matter. You cannot repeat what someone has said. So Shannon's looking at me like she's going to kill me.
I'm looking at because I wrote mine down. Oh. So what do I do if Rochelle takes mine?
Actually, then, you know what?
Oh. Rochelle wrote hers down.
Oh, I did not. I'm a spur of the moment kind of girl. I'm going to change it up. Shannon gets to go first this week.
Ooh, okay.
Betrayal.
Dun, 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 dun.
All right, well, I hope this isn't Rochelle's, but I was the most surprised by the darkness overtaking Sonia. I did not see her killing that feeder coming. Not even like the feeder came in, I was like, oh, something's off. But someone's going to stop her, but then no one stopped her.
I will say, shout out to that feeder who had a very small role, but like I was very sad for her. Because it was just the way that she was like, Sonia.
I was scared for her.
And she kind of was really in fear. She did a good job.
Absolutely.
No role too small, girl.
And the thing I was most delighted by was the iconic gif coming to life of Romitri getting in their fight stances with their stakes. I've been waiting like ever since the trailer to see that scene.
Yeah.
And we finally got to see it.
As soon as they came out of their clothing store and I was looking at their outfits, I'm like, that's the outfit she wears when they face off somebody. And I was like, I saw it. And I knew he was in the duster. And I was like, here we go.
It's true. It's true. All right. Rochelle, I hope I did not steal either of yours.
You did not. So we are cool. My big surprise was the alchemists. Like, I originally thought, like, oh, Adrian's coming into the series early, but he's in, you know, the first half of books 1 to 6, so we can deal with that. No, this came early, but the alchemists are way out there. And so to see them introduced was a surprise, but a great surprise because you should get hints of them since they are so integral in this world. I want to know if we're going to see more. I don't know. By the end of the series, will we see Sydney? I don't know.
I mean, does it end on with a Sydney hint? Maybe? Could our Sidrian fans out there realize the dream? I've seen a lot of people on Twitter calling for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But the triangle, if it happens with Rose and Dimitri, does that still have to play out before?
Is it a square?
Whoa. Oh. Well, Mason's in there. It's a polygon. It's just, yeah.
What were you most delighted by?
Adrian's list at the end. You know, when he mentions at the beginning, like, oh, you know, maybe there's someone more fun, you're just like, oh, yeah, maybe. And you just think it's a dropped Adrian thing and off they go. And first of all, the fact that Christian is on the list is delightful. But just that Adrian came through on that, you know, Adrian's done some stuff, but he is still Adrian. And we just kind of expect him to not always deliver anything meaningful, but he does. And it's thoughtful and purposeful, and it's a nice piece of him.
I feel like Adrian's a pot stirrer, and I think this fun list is a great way for him to stir the royal pot. He kind of wants to see probably some interesting things from afar at court and just watch gossip and drama from outside in. And I think this list for him. I will say I did think he was suggesting himself, and I was like, whoa, this is different. When he first said, you know, there could be more fun options before he sent her the actual list, I was like, oh, is Adrian going to say to her? And then he sent the list and I was like, oh, interesting, good choices. I don't think he knows that Christian and Lyssa were together though. I think he's just picking good names that could be, again, controversial to the royals. I don't think it's him. I don't think Adrian Avashkov is a Dragon Zero shipper.
Yeah, we didn't have any reason to think he would know about that.
Who knows? He's a man with many connections, as we see in the show, so he might. Who knows?
All right, Felicity, it is your turn. Surprise and delight.
I will say I was surprised, in a funny way, about how we got to see genuine romantic couple Romitri in like the first little bit. Like I didn't think we were going to go straight into them being happy and playful and like having a nice, like great makeout session. Cause it was surprising / immediately worried me because I'm like, no, this is too soon. What we can't, this won't last. But it was so lovely. And they were out in the sun in the daytime and they just, She looked happy. He looked happy. I was surprised to be happy by it. So I was kind of half surprised, half delighted. And then I will say I was delighted. I'm going to go straight into my delight. I was delighted by some classic Adrian moments when Lissa said, well, Dimitri, if you don't come, then I'm going to have to go with Adrian and he's going to protect me. And he's like, Adrian's like, I don't fight. Like, it was a very Adrian style of...
Like, I'm useless in a fight.
Yeah, like, I don't do that. And very Adrian kind of barbs being thrown out, you know, we're going to get a drink. You can't come kind of vibes. So I was intrigued by that. But I do really like to... I was delighted by, I think, Michelle, you said it, his platonic friendship with Lissa.
In that they seem to be, like, respecting each other, understanding the struggles that each other has on a very Adrian playful level. But it's not... There's no hint or no thing of like, could they be interested in each other? Just because a guy and a girl meet doesn't mean that they automatically are interested in each other. And I think they played that really well.
And also because they both need each other. They have been on these kind of lonely paths, struggling in their different ways. And so it's nice just to suddenly, oh, I have an ally. And that's what the closeness is. Not, you know, romance doesn't even need to come into it because it's finally someone who understands, and it's good for both of them.
No, and I was kind of waiting too for Adrian. Like, I wasn't sure if the show was going to make him have some ulterior motives with taking her to Clarice or something like that. But he seems just to want to say, you are like me and I want to try and help both of us. And I like that. All right, Shannon.
All right. Are we ready?
I see you looking at me like you've got something up your sleeve. And
I
you
have
to do.
Not three, but four quiz questions.
Ooh. Oh, God.
And I threw in one extra ridiculous one just for Michelle.
Oh, come on. I assume you mean that it will make me look ridiculous.
No, it's just extra, extra specific.
All right.
We'll start off with, I think a more reasonable one, because it's clearly stated in the beginning of the episode. How many original Moroi saints were there?
12?
Yeah, it was 12 for each of the houses, yeah.
The answer is actually 13.
What?
Is 13. It I think maybe 12 families, but there were 13 saints mentioned at the beginning of the episode.
I was like, is it 12 plus of Vladimir, the ultimate saint? Power saint!
All right. Mm. The next question is, why does Dimitri get to drive instead of Rose?
Because Dimitri does.
that's
is that
right
acceptable?
Because no, Rose can't drive.
Yes, because Rose has never driven a car is the answer.
Which I thought was interesting, but then makes sense, actually, because she would have been always sitting with
Lissa, like,
in the back.
Because she's never left the academy. And
yeah.
It does seem like something young guardian novices should trained in. We've kind of, what have we presumed here? That she's about 18 in this. Yeah, yeah. It's not even a matter of your country's driver's license. It's like, what if you got to jump in your tank, you know, and go run down some Strigois? You need some training in that.
I mean, I am ready for a side one of Dimitri teaches Rose to drive. Come on, we all want to see it. Don't lie.
That'd be amazing. Yeah.
All right, so the next question's easier. It's to prepare you for my hard question. Dimitri tells Rose why he needs the code of the guardians to keep him in check, citing his childhood. Where does this very intimate conversation take place?
Moonlit boat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm all on a boat. I did sing that to myself.
All right.
I'm on a boat.
It's an easier one. Okay, and our final question is, Lissa and Rose stop for clothes on their adventure to find answers about spirit. What color is Lissa's jacket?
I thought you were going to ask me the name of the store. I was like, oh, it's hard. It's
bright.
It is bright. Is it like a ready pink kind of vibe to it?
It was. I was hoping you were gonna let Michelle answer that.
Oh, no!
Yeah. It's leather-esque, too, right? Like, when I saw it, it reminded me of, like, 90s, like, I don't know.
It's like a puffy, like, shiny red jacket. I clearly underestimated both of you, so I apologize for that. I will just have to come up with much harder questions.
That's why I
was,
thought you were going to ask us the name of the store. I wouldn't have known it.
I wouldn't even know that.
You're just going to have to pause these things now.
I'm going
to
be like,
what
song? What
was on the letterbox behind them when they were standing at the door?
What song is playing in the background of the shopping mall while they're shopping?
What is the number plate on the car that they drive?
All right. I will come up with harder questions next week.
Don't work too hard on those quiz questions because I may have some news about next week that may cause you to rethink those questions. So just...
Ooh. Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to make everybody wait to the end of the episode before I tell you. So just wait. We have our next segment, which is fan mail. Ding! We asked everyone on the Penguin Teen's Instagram stories and our Twitter account what your most favorite thing of the series has been so far. And there's some amazing answers, some really lovely, lovely feedback that I want to share with everybody, and we can chat about it because you've all come with such beautiful thoughts. So, Shannon, what was our first letter?
All right, so our first one comes from Angela on Twitter and says, I also have to say I love the overall look of the show. The fact that it was filmed in Spain, the castle, the academy, it's all beautiful. The wardrobe of the royals mirrors the overall tone from the books.
I do laugh. Speaking of, we're talking about the clothes in the club. I felt like saying, Lisa, you could have just worn what you're wearing to the club. Like, the parka was probably actually not a great choice.
I think they just wanted to change the clothes.
I'm all right if they want to go shopping. But yeah. I was also like, you have a pretty nice wardrobe, Lisa. Rose needed to change because she was in her Guardian gear. But
that reminded me a little bit of book one when they go to the mall.
Yes. Maybe that's what that was, a nice little shout-out to book one.
Yeah.
From Twitter, Madison, I was nervous about the changes in the timeline, but my favourite thing is that even though the story may be a little different, the actors do such a good job of portraying the characters. It's the correct vibe, and it feels like Vampire Academy, especially Rose. Cece is Rose, and I would 100% agree. And particularly this episode, there was a couple of moments there where I was just like, Rose Hathaway is on screen, which of course she is, but it's just, I felt it like particularly when we saw the softness, because I think we talked about it with Cece last week. It's really not easy, but it's definitely being the badass character is kind of, you could physically do it. You could stand there with a gruff look on your face, but peeking at the vulnerability of Rose in different ways was so beautiful, both in her happy, joyful softness and her excitement. And then with her like sadness when she realizes that she can't have what she wants.
Cece does both beautifully, the tough and the soft sides. Both are, you buy into both. They're both absolutely real.
Yeah.
All right. So this next one comes from Sparkles2611 on Instagram and says, Eddie. Eddie is the real MVP of the whole VA world. I was concerned he'd be MIA.
Eddie is like the little cameo guy that pops up every episode or so, and it's just hilarious.
We love Eddie.
From Instagram, Casey Reads and Reads, two words, Adriana Vashkov. And I think we did see a lot of fans write in and say that Adriana Vashkov being on screen for the first time was so exciting to them. And I think this is obviously the difference between other cinematic filmings of VA, that this is, we are seeing Adrian on screen for the first time. And I think particularly for this episode, fans are going to really have fun with Adrian.
Yeah, once they've gotten over the initial, like, whoa, it's Adrian. And, you know, you kind of need time to process that. And now, you know, we get to see him in action.
Melly on Twitter says, the cast do a fantastic job. And the way the unfairness of the Moroi class system is such a focus. I can't wait for the revolution.
I'm like, same. Do you hear the people sing? I'm like, yes, let's go. Because I think that too, we were talking about it, of like the political and the religious aspects of it, but Rose's defiance of it and even Lissa's like, this is bad for you. And she's like, great, but maybe ask me about it first before you make all these decisions for me. It's just such an interesting world that's been even further shown of how much these guardians are treated like absolute garbage and so disposable. From Twitter, Lena Mavo, Mamiya, I'm adoring seeing the chemistry between the characters and being able to delve into relationships like Mia and Sonia and Rose and Lissa or Rose and Meredith in more depth. And big shout out to Mamiya as well, because we had guests last week with Kieran and Cece. We didn't get a chance to even talk about Meredith and Mia had their first kiss, which I thought they'd had already, but no, it was their first kiss. It was their big snuggle in bed moment. And I again, if anything happens to them, I will fight people. I'm balancing a lot of ships in my hand, but Mamiya is a good one.
It is. It is. I think a lot of people wanted to see Mia find love because, you know, she's like so many. There's a heart under that hard exterior, and here's someone bringing it out. It was lovely.
And I think the thing that, like, at the end of this episode that's really heartbreaking is it looks like if Sonya is Strigoi, Meredith may now have to hunt down Mia's sister.
Oof.
Yeah.
Okay, so this next one comes from Instagram and says, the development of Spirit's darkness and its impact on Lyssa and Rose.
Mm.
Which we're really starting to see now.
Yeah. It was interesting, too, to see them actually talk it through this episode and kind of, it had been acknowledged that they felt it. Maybe they sort of knew what it was, but.
I hope this person's prepared for this episode.
What was interesting to me was to see how shocked and furious that Dimitri was about when we didn't see Rose explain it to him, but he sort of said, tell me, and then we cut to somewhere else and he come back and he's reacting to that news and how much it rocks his world that this other thing could be out there.
Like he's just such a person of order and structure.
It's just, again, the rule. He needs rules.
He can't rock the boat.
No. Ayo. Don't rock the, nicely done, Shannon. This episode will be called Don't Rock the Boat. from IG, imperfect_dreamer, of course, when Dimitri calls Rose, Rosa. Yeah, he did that very well.
It's definitely a fast fan favorite.
I will say I am very disappointed in myself because he was on Peacock's Instagram. Kieran was on Peacock's Instagram Live last week and they had him say it. And I was like, damn it, I didn't ask him to do it on the podcast, Felicity. You know better. So I'm just disappointed. Hopefully if he comes back, we'll get him to say the line.
If only for that.
Yeah.
All right. This next one comes from Instagram and very simply says, the Tanner family is everything.
There's a lot of love in the DMs for Sasha as well as Mikhail, which those Tanner kids.
Yeah.
Sasha's on the loose, but.
I wonder if we'll see her again.
I could, you know, have a spin-off, VA, the Tanner years, the early years of Sasha and Mikhail being little guardians together. Again, for the 50th time, RIP Mikhail. Also from Instagram, sky_MS, the way they've woven the politics in heaps earlier and Sonhale, which is another early thing that I don't think we sort of saw coming, was the love for Sonya and Mikhail. Like Julie Plec at the Comic-Con panel spoke about how they loved Mason and they weren't ready to quite kill him off in the way that the books had as early because they were interweaving a few different elements of different books. I wonder if there's a regret of like, wow, people have really liked Mikhail. Are they having Rochelle's equivalent of a Mason moment? And Rochelle, you might need to counsel Julie and Marguerite through that about how to deal with I've killed someone who everybody loves.
Yeah, it was hard, but I think it really drives home the stakes. I did not intend that pun. with what's going on with Lyssa, because here she is uncovering all this stuff, and there's kind of this nebulous, the darkness, and it sounds very scary. But then with Sonya, you're like, whoa, it really is scary. You know, you've really got it there in your face.
And I suppose if Mikhail had been around, he probably would have helped her and she wouldn't have gone so far over the edge so quickly. Like his death is a big catalyst in pushing her,
that's
metaphorically
true.
Speaking, not actually off the ledge bird speaking, although she does do that too.
All right. Our final fan mail of today comes from Twitter and reads, everything is perfect. I couldn't be more grateful for this. The actors are amazing. They really care about the fans and about the show. Seeing my favorite book series become this TV show left me speechless. Here's my thank you to everyone that's been working at Vampire Academy, the TV show.
Aww. Oh, that's great.
I mean, true though, and I think we felt it last week with Cece and Kieran. They really love the fans and they want this show to speak for the books while also being its own thing. And I think there's a real care for the world that they're creating. This is not just like, cool, let's just take a New York Times bestselling series and like do things. They know and respect the legacy of this fandom, which I was sort of really touched by, particularly from, you know, Cece because she's been a reader for a long time, but even from Kieran, who kind of came on board as he got the project, hearing him sort of suddenly really understand who Dimitri was and like even him saying last week, I don't know if Dimitri would dance. It wasn't sort of my right. And he figured out the way that Dimitri would dance was an interesting thing of like, oh, no, he's really thought about this. It's not just like I'm playing a cool bad boy, you know, not even a bad boy, but I'm playing the cool love interest. I'm just going to like grimace in the corner. He's got why and understanding of why really locked in. And I think they all approach it that way.
Yeah, it shows in the way that's portrayed that they're not just following stage direction. You know, Dimitri does dancing, you know, and he kind of goes out there. I mean, he dances and he gets it. He's he's doing it his way, Dimitri's way. It makes everything throughout that feel so authentic.
Good job, everyone, Vampire Academy Peacock series. that's it for another epic, epic week of Vampire Academy. We had new faces. Hello, Clarice. We had new places. Hello, the club and the boat. And then we had the rise and fall of Remetri. Hopefully not forever. As I said earlier, I don't think it's forever. I just think maybe now is the right time. I'm going to stand by that, even though I'm sure everyone's yelling at me right now on the podcast. But as I said, I had a surprise news. We have new guests for next week. We have two new exciting guests. Joining us next week are series creators Julie Pleck and Marguerite McIntyre.
Woo! What? Wow. Are you already preparing your statement about Mikhail, Felicity?
I'm ready. I'm ready to petition for the man to come back. I've got my thesis on Remetri prepared.
Felicity's worked out the details of how to bring him back.
Yeah. I'm like, this is how it's going to work. This is how it's going to go. No, I'm so excited because I think there's got a lot to discuss. And Rochelle, you've met them before or no? This will be your first time.
In email, we have exchanged some things about the show, but no, we haven't talked. It's been great. I'm curious to hear their thoughts.
Yeah. Well, and also because everyone keeps saying to me, who sends us the episode each week to pre-review before we record, episode 8. And Kieran has said publicly episode 8, and a couple other people have said episode 8 has some big things in it. So I'm nervous, I'm scared.
Yeah, you should be.
Ooh. What's that mean?
Well, Rochelle's seen it.
That's true. So be sure to join us next week when we recap that episode 8, The Trials. And make sure you're following Rochelle and Penguin Teen on all your favorite social media platforms for the latest Vampire Academy news. We'll talk to y'all next week. And don't forget, never hesitate.